The Alabama Crops Report Podcast, your trusted information source for Alabama agriculture.
Hey, everybody. Welcome into the Alabama Crops Report Podcast. Got Scott, Simmer, and Amanda with us, and a very special guest, longtime recurring guest of the podcast, Dr. Steve Brown. Steve, good to see you.
Good to be with y'all this morning.
Yeah, this is your second time, right, on this one
after
since you started. So. Second time as a retired or as a semi-retired man. So why don't you, Steve, give us a quick update on what you're doing these days?
My wife said I couldn't come home and bother her all the time, so I actually teach a class. I taught a class in the fall semester and teaching a class this semester. In the fall, I taught advanced crop science, and then now I'm teaching basic crop science. I'm also on a research grant with Dr. Ortiz, and I'll actually meet with them tomorrow afternoon, and that keeps me a little bit busy. I do some volunteer mowing for a camp about 30 miles up the road, and I mow, and last Friday I sprayed herbicide and got herbicide all over myself because the sprayer leaked. But anyway, so I stay pretty busy, and I just came from my workout this morning at the Auburn Rec and Wellness Center.
Well, good. When, you know, every meeting we go to, people ask about you and how you're doing, and I say good, and you're still helping the industry just a little bit different way now, helping teach some of these youngins.
And you're always still around for us to rope you back in for the podcast and other extension stuff. So you're never too far from helping the growers. So
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Well, we wanted to, we're just getting close to planting cotton time. Simmer and I went yesterday with Ron and met with a couple of farmers about some on-farm trials Simmer's going to do. And they were starting to get ready to plant cotton next week. So today is April 16th. So we'll start planting soon.
Well, there used to be a saying, and maybe it held true further south, but I'm sure it doesn't hold true where we are, that pecan trees, they indicate when it's time to plant. Well, pecan trees have been leafed out in our area and a little farther north. They've been leafed out for a while. Well, and so you can raise the question, do pecan trees ever lie? And I think the answer is yes.
Well, no frost, though.
Yeah.
No frost.
But cool nights.
Yeah.
I'm wearing a pullover right now.
Seeds are rather expensive.
Yeah.
And so no need to get in a hurry. You don't need to practice.
And you said that. I was wondering. So Will Sanford yesterday, when we were talking to him, he starts saying something about the birds on the pecan trees. And I'm like, what is he talking about? Yeah,
I had not heard before the whippoorwill.
Yeah, I don't know about the whippoorwill.
Whippoorwill, yeah. He said that one of his neighbors, who normally plants a little bit earlier than he does even, says when you hear your first whippoorwill, it's time to plant. And he said he heard about 2 weeks ago.
Well, we've had hummingbirds for 2 or 3 weeks, and I think at night they needed jackets. But no need to get in a rush. And really, to me, our biggest concern is soil moisture, not temperature. Because, you know, we're going to turn the page here in a day or so, and we're going to go from, we're having 45-degree mornings or 48-degree mornings till we're going to have 60-degree nights and 85-degree days. And so we better capture moisture when we got it. And we're probably at that point that if we have good moisture from here on, it's probably time to go. By the time you can post this,
2 weeks.
We should be all out when we got moisture.
Yeah, and that was what we talked about. It. We're at the point now where if you got moisture, go get them.
Yeah, that's right.
And we're recording this just for our listeners' reference on April 16th.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So hopefully it'll be online the last week of April.
Okay.
So
all out if you got moisture.
Yeah. And, you know, something I've been putting my 2 cents out is my time as the interim acting self-appointed cotton specialist is try to spread out planting dates a little bit and spread your risk. In a state like Alabama, where we have very little irrigation capacity, what do you think about that?
I do think planting date gives us some diversity of risk. And I remember dealing with a large farm enterprise in North Alabama a few years ago, and they planted their entire corn crop in a matter of 36, 38 hours. I mean, it was multiple thousands of acres, and they wanted to do cotton like that, and I think they did. I would argue against that because I think, like you said, that's probably a mistake because you certainly can't pick it in a matter of 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. So I do think different planting dates, and it, you know, we get slow and steady in our planting progress. That gives us some diversity of exposure on what the weather's going to be and the stresses are going to be, and hopefully we're going to hit well. We're going to do well with some of those. You know, we do the same thing with variety selection. We don't put all our eggs in one basket, and there's no single star variety that kicks everything every time, every field, and so we diversify that way as well. And I think the two together, different varieties and different planting dates, give us some risk management that helps us in the long run.
Yeah, you're not going to hit a grand slam home run, but you're not going to strike out on a pitch on the dirt either. Yeah. You know, sometimes just a solid double is not a bad approach. That's right.
Dr. Ron Smith mentioned yesterday what 10% he would go just plant 10%
of his cotton in April. Yeah.
In April.
Yeah.
Do you think that as
Every season is different. We've been a little cool in the mornings in the last few weeks, mm-hmm. the last couple of weeks. In fact, one day I've had some actual frost on my windshield, and I do think my truck gets colder than the air really, but so yeah, normally I would say mid-April when we got moisture, we got to go. So I don't have a problem with that. If I'm a dryland producer, when I've got moisture, I got to go, and I'm gonna go as long as I can go to get a stand. So
yeah.
In my former life, where irrigation was abundant, the magic date that was projected was, hey, we want to plant everything on May 10th, which is not possible. But one of the reasons to plant in more towards mid-May is that we want to avoid that the Labor Day, September mm-hmm. rain events, hurricane events that come in and soak us for several days and cause bowl rot and hard rot. We want to open after that period. So that was sort of the recommendation. Wait, if you can, to that kind of time frame, May 10th or later. But again, I think for us, soil temperature is not the issue, it's moisture, so we got to go when we got it.
And Amanda, if I remember right, not a lot of boll rot last year, right? We were very fortunate because we didn't have a lot of cotton out there anyway.
Yeah, and that coupled with just the last 2 years, really, we've been pretty dry right around mm-hmm. harvest time. So that's really helped keep the boll rots down, just in general, and hardlock. And I think this year it's still at a toss-up if you look at that forecast from the National Weather Service. If we're kind of at equal chances for being, you know, at the yearly average, below or above. So they still don't really know what the hurricane season would potentially do, but that could bring more or less overall. But the last 2 years, just overall, we've been pretty fortunate with that weather and just the drought conditions.
Yeah, you know, I had a buddy in grad school that said it's a 50-50 chance of rain every day.
I do
it's either
going
to rain or it's not.
I do think the long-term forecasting abilities of our meteorologists is getting better,
yeah.
so they tell us about trends, and I do think we probably should think about and react to trends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the everyday call is challenging, but the trend of we're going to be wetter or drier or hotter or cooler, they're getting better and better at that, I think.
Yeah. You were talking about when there's moisture just go and all that. I was just thinking about, you know, I visited with some growers in North Alabama, and they got these high-speed planters, and actually two of them, you know. And I was kind of wondering, I'm like, what makes them make an investment in such a technology, because it's not something cheap, right? But they kind of say when it's time to plant, they like to get everything planted within 2 weeks. And if they don't have two planters, and if they're not running 8-9 miles per hour, they can't cover that.
Is this the brush type planter that holds
yeah,
the seed all
speed.
The
so we're gonna
to drops
do,
at about
yeah.
only 2 inches? Yeah.
We're gonna do a bunch of speed trials with them just to kind of see, are we getting the same type of performance from a planter at those high speeds as you will at 4 or 5 miles. But it kind of brings back chasing moisture in a way, is that maybe the technologies give you that opportunity to go and do it, which our normal planters
can't
do not have.
Yeah.
You know.
And if you're talking about sizable acres, which you would be with those,
yeah.
with double planters and high speed planters, then you get some added diversity through different varieties and so forth. So, you know, the smaller grower that says, "Hey, I can do it in 2 weeks," that's different than what they're
yeah.
talking about. So.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I've heard the word singulation more times in February this year than I had my entire life combined, maybe times two. But we learned yesterday there's still a fair amount of folks out there hill dropping.
Well, the only reason to hill drop is to break through a crust. And, you know, some of the varieties that we've loved in recent years have been sort of weak starters. Now, it's like golf. It's not how you start. It's how you arrive.
And unless you hitting it out of bounds every time off the tee.
That's true. But, I don't know what the percentage is on hill drop versus singulation. What I've heard in some of my interaction with Dr. Ortiz in this particular project, we got some people, because of cost and because of the market situation, they're stretching singulation out to sort of extreme. They're talking about planting this one seed every 9, 10, 11 inches.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I do think we can make good yields on thinner populations. I know that's anathema to the people in North Alabama. They can't even imagine that. Yeah. But it does make it take it a little longer. But in the South, that doesn't mean much. Else.
If you can plant 20,000 and get 20,000 up,
yeah.
I don't think we're going to get 20,000 up.
That's the problem.
I think the numbers ranges anywhere from, say, the low 90s to mid 50s. And I think an average would be 80. I also think, though, by the time we really get rolling, our soil temperature is good, that if we got moisture, our cotton's going to come out of the ground very rapidly. You know, 4 or 5 days is probably fairly normal. I know as you go further north, they're waiting around 7 or 8 days. And I know in the South, on warm temperatures, it's not up in 5 or 6 days. I'm thinking something's wrong. And so it screams out of the ground with us when we got temperature and moisture.
Something I didn't see a lot in Mississippi was a whole bunch of cotton seeds with the seed coat still on the cotyledons. And since I've moved to Alabama, I've started seeing that a whole lot more because we don't, back home they're planting in late April, first week of May, it's still cool. But here, when those temperatures are right, I mean, you don't have time to kick the seed hole off.
Yeah, and what I think happens in that is if you plant and you don't get any kind of rain or the soil is somewhat dry, you don't get a lot of pressure and resistance to pull that seed coat off as the hypocotyl pulls up through the soil surface. So I see that. I've rarely seen it take out a stand. I've seen it take out a stand once or twice. But that's unusual. Normally, it'll slough off and pop off.
Yeah, it normally pops off a day
but
or so later.
That's a sign of the lack of resistance coming through the soil.
I was thinking it was just how quickly it.
I think it could be that too.
Well, that we noticed a lot. I got some really good pictures. We were doing a planter downforce trial one time, and then you put a lot more downforce on that seed, and when it was coming out, you don't see any.
Yeah, you got greater resistance.
Issues.
Mm.
Yeah. So that seed's working so hard to just get out of the ground and all that.
Yeah.
So what percentage of planters do you think have downforce control capabilities? Just ballpark.
50%
maybe. 50? Wow. That's high. I would have thought it's
that high.
No,
there's I think most planters have some downforce on them. I would newer technology, I would say 20 to
maybe
30.
I'm thinking about sophisticated downforce.
Yeah, so 20 to maybe less than 20.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Even yesterday, a grower has a brand new planter, but they didn't have the newest downforce technology that's available. It was still like some airbags and other, which we don't usually recommend in a way anymore.
Well, one of the things that we were talking before we started recording, we have more and more sophistication and more expense with planters because seed are so precious, and so that's really propelled all the possibilities we can do to tweak planters. You know, I know in the corn world, you hear me say that the corn heroes want every corn seed to come up within 10 seconds of each other. And cotton is not as critical, but cotton seed is more finicky than our other crops in terms of stand establishment.
I think so. I was thinking about this. Maybe you have seen it, data, or maybe know of, like in corn, like you said, when they did all this plant, where it all started with singulation, like if you miss a plant, you miss a plant, you miss you have a yield penalty because you missed.
You lost an ear.
You lost an ear, right? It's a direct impact on the yield. I know we keep saying cotton compensates. I mean, heck, how much can it compensate in a way? Is there any research that say, okay, after you have lowered your population, whatever, like we always talk about, if you don't have a plant within every foot or something, then you may want to see something. Is there any research that ties back to if you lose one cotton plant and your spacing within the rows is this, then you have this much yield loss?
I don't know that would be hard to do. I can't imagine. I will say in the old days, when you were dealing with a replant question, if the answer was, and maybe this was when our yield goal was 800, 900 or even 1,000 pounds, not 1,500 pounds, but the deciding factor is if you could step and touch a cotton plant, whether it was down the row or across the row, then you were okay.
So that's on a foot.
On a replant situation.
That's not, about a foot, right?
No.
That's 3 feet.
Close to 3 feet.
Oh. Take a step.
Yeah. Now that's not okay. Ideal.
Not
that's
total
not
heel.
Ideal.
Yeah.
That's not ideal. And clearly, when you have a thin stand, it's going to take more time. That's not an issue from here south. As you get to North Alabama, I think in their situation it may be.
Maybe.
But, I think if we have a plant per foot, we're going to be pretty good.
We're okay.
I think we can make it. Now, I hear farmers say that when you have a thin stand, it's harder to pick. They don't have as consistency of harvest, and I can't answer that. Maybe you may.
On the lowers, it's more uneven or all that. I don't think it's that bad of an issue if it's a lesser stand in a way. Yeah, you're still running the picker through. It's probably got a little bit more efficiency because these pickers, the way like the deer design, all that, and I learned it a couple of years ago with it, a training on a picker with the agents, and he was saying like if you're not running 5.78 or 5.8 miles per hour, everything is just so synced together, whatever, that's the best efficiency you're going to get.
Okay.
Or something. So anytime you slow down, speed up, all that, those parts are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. I've always heard it's harder actually, and I've seen it when it's too thick of a cotton or aggressive variety or something, then you consistently have to like either slow the picker down or stop to make sure you don't have any, you know, heads that are stuck or any corn stalk stuck in there. I think on the other side, I think we're okay. It's just like you're not feeding a consistent, except for the part that it's not feeding a consistent cotton to the heads, I think.
When you get a lot of vegetative branching,
yeah,
it probably is, you know, is a little more lost,
yeah,
and so forth. I did have an experience one time, and this was when we were fighting or dealing with the bark issue, and how aggressive the planters were set and running and so forth. So a farmer said, you know why we run as fast as we do? I said, no, I don't. He says, because we can't run any faster. So, you know, it's a, you know, at harvest, maybe I think less so at planting, but at harvest, hey, let's get it done. At planting, we need to be taking our time because as we drive over the field, we're doing so much and expending so much, and so much needs to be right. We need to take our time to make sure.
Well,
it's
it goes back to all, and this maybe starting in the corn wall, but it's equally relevant to the cotton side, is you make that one pass, right? It's not like you can go back and correct it.
Yeah.
So you better spend the time to make sure that you make a perfect pass, because if not, then any penalties, mistakes, or anything, you're going to watch those the whole season, and you might, you know, get mad at yourself or, of course, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But that's the opportunity to do anything is before you make that pass, not once you made it.
And speaking of taking your time, I've said this on the podcast before, but the coolest data that Simmer has shown, in my opinion, since he's been here, and he's shown some really cool stuff, is the difference if you get in his 4-row planter, the difference in how deep seeding depth can be from one unit to the next,
yeah,
when you set on the same settings.
Mm.
And so that checking all of those before you get going is important. And it's, well, one thing I like about it, Steve, is it kind of looks like it's playing. Like you say, you know, I don't do science, I just play. There's nothing overly scientific about it. But if you're 2 inches off, that throws everything off. Yeah.
And it matters more in cotton, you know, because we're barely putting it under the soil. And if you have a quarter to half inch variability between the row units, you're putting seed on the ground on one side of the planter where you're.
And that kind of goes back to something we were talking about in the last podcast episode that we did, was that just with the cost of seed, and especially if you're doing that premium seed treatment, seed that's going to give that extra cost, you know, making sure you're going in at the, you know, the proper seeding rates, the proper depth, you know, you want it, all of that impacts all the way through the season. And even if we've seen with seeding rates, if you have too dense of a population, that can increase your risk for disease later in the season. And so with the cost of things right now and the current outlook, you know, that could even impact your fungicide applications later on. So it's just starting out on the right foot going down is going to be critical, especially I think this year, just because of just our economic state that we have.
We've had situations, we've had varieties that were so ticklish that a minor change in depth meant success or failure. And we probably still have some of those varieties in the marketplace today.
We're talking about seeding rates and stuff. You know, I know when we met with consultants one time a few weeks ago, I think they were saying that some of their growers, because of the commodity prices, all that, so they were the two biggest thing I think they kind of pointed out was like they're backing off a little bit on the fertility side, and then other was the seeding rate. You know, in your experience, I guess, I know our seeding rates vary significantly from north to south Alabama. You know, how would you kind of suggest growers manage that?
I'm really comfortable with 2 seed per foot as we go from here south. I know farmers doing less than that, and I think the research data would support that. I think in cotton we should think, hey, we're going to get up 80%. I think in corn that number may be closer to 90.
It's like 95.
Yeah,
90,
or, yeah, better than that. So I'm comfortable with 2. If I knew my ground and I was a farmer and I had good moisture, I might cheat that. I would cheat that. But I, as a recommender, I probably wouldn't recommend below that.
Yeah.
As you go further north, they're going to be closer. I really think they're going to be closer to 3 and maybe plus a little bit. I would encourage them, particularly those that can just change the planter plant population or seed population with a dial.
Yeah.
Try some, dial it back to 30,000 and see what you can. I think they can get by with 2.5 as you go further north. Yeah. But that's what
we're doing. I mean, Scott knows, like, my first year of planter trials, we're not looking at something too crazy sophisticated. We're just like, hey, what population doing? You think you have opportunity to lower some seeding rate, especially the planters we have today, what you were saying, all you got to do is sit in that cap, punch a number, make a pass, see what it does on your farm, you know? Instead of planting 3 seeds, what if it's 2.75, 2.5 seed or whatever, right? That's a lot of seed cost that you can just save if you make the same yield.
Right. And my observation on research stations for people that weren't paying for the seed, they always planted too much.
Yeah.
And I would comment on the fertility side that you made. I do think we can probably skate by with some dialing back on our nitrogen. Now, again, farmers know their ground better than you and I do, and what it will do and how aggressive a planting will grow. But I think if we're, you know, 90 seems to be the magic number. If we're plus 90, I think we can back up. I think most of, in my experience, when we've had nitrogen trials, first year out, we hadn't seen huge differences in response. So I think even if we've done 90 and 90-90, we might can cut that back to 80 or 75 and get by. You know, it's not that we don't want dark green aggressive plants in late September. We want them to begin to look ugly and beginning to make that turn probably in the first week or so of September if it's a normal planting date. So I think nitrogen might be something we can tweak back and save a few dollars. Seeding rate, most people have tinkered and probably played and cut it. So they probably know how low they can go.
And my most recent specialist speaking that I did, I kind of tried to make that point that you know, particularly for crop protection materials, insecticides, fungicides, herbicides, we've cut as far as we can, basically. But even, I mean, to a certain point, seeding rates, fertilizers, you still got to have yield potential that can break even or more, right? Yeah. So you can only cut back so much. Yeah. Christy, we talked to Christy yesterday, and she said that she had a guy calling about maybe using litter for the first time, and how can that help me cut back on my synthetic fertilizer? So that's something else people are starting to look at.
I think chicken litter is great, and the standard approach probably ought to be 2 tons of litter, and then dial your side dress application back to 40 or 50. We've had people putting litter on and still putting 80 or 90 units, and that's too much.
I was going to say, I just had some meetings with some growers. They're like, we put 2 ton and then go back, still put another 90 out. And I'm like, you're not really healthy.
Yeah, and you create some of your, you know, you create some of your disease issues if you're so aggressive that way.
Plant bugs, too.
Yeah,
those high nitrogen rates, just, it doesn't matter what crop you're in. If you're too high in nitrogen, that's going to increase your risk for diseases in general. Yeah. That's just a good rule of thumb.
Yeah. How true is this? I heard this a few years ago when we were doing some cotton work on farm, and one of, I think I may have been an industry guy or someone, and he said some of our growers are really used to growing cotton where they put a lot of nitrogen, lush up the plant and all that. It's like over application. We do aggressively on the nitrogen and then we come back aggressively with PGR to manage it, you know. So it's like you first give it all and then try to control
the principle. And that date, we've been playing with picks for 40 plus years, 45 years almost, and that was, hey, the light bulb went off. Even the first years, I remember being involved in a study at Tennessee Valley. And it was an irrigation nitrogen study. And, hey, the idea is, hey, I can stomp the gas with irrigation and nitrogen and get a more robust plant. And then I can also jam on the brakes with my PGR, and I can grow magic. It really doesn't work that way. I think picks or PGRs are a commonplace in our management. But we're not. It's not going to be the magic to high yields. We're going to manage the plant, yes, but we got to – We just don't want to overdo nitrogen. I think that's a mistake. Sometimes if we have our brag patch and you're looking at it, you think, oh man, I want my cotton to be green and robust. Well, no, that's not it. You want it to make fruit, and y'all know more about peanuts than I do for sure. But if a peanut, when peanuts stress with a whole load of pods, you know, it doesn't look quite as strong and healthy as if it's got nothing under it. And so we don't need green and robust cotton second week of September. We want it to be on the decline.
Nitrogen in particular, correct me if I'm wrong, indirectly contributes to yield by having a bigger leaf, more photosynthesis, but it's really potassium that's filling those bowls,
yes,
right?
Potassium is the element that I'd be very reluctant to cut back on. We've seen too many issues where we have potassium deficiencies and we get premature defoliation, we get some secondary diseases and so forth. So yeah, potassium is the one element we better have a good program there.
And especially if we have, you know, in our dry land production more specifically, and if you have drought too, then you're going to be more at risk, especially with the potassium and potash deficiencies later in the season. You're going to get more stemphylium. And then if we just have enough moisture, something like Erlang mildew can come through and really defoliate that lush green cotton. And so that's definitely one I would not cut back on.
Well, Steve, we appreciate your time. Anything else we need to talk about? We're getting short on.
No, we really need a good year, no question about it. And I had a conversation with a graduate student who you know, who you try to recruit. he went to work with camp. But he's come from a farm family, and he's thinking, hey, do I go on for a PhD or do I go back to farm? And he says, I don't see how these people are making it. And so there's tremendous pressure on us, on the economic structure of agriculture. And my graduate student friend says, but hey, cows are good.
Yeah.
And his family grows some beef cattle as well as peanuts and cotton. So
I spoke to the Cherokee County Young Farmers Monday, and I, I told him, hey, you know, I really admire y'all for getting into this right now, but also they made the same. Yeah, cows are we can make a little bit of money.
So it's tough times. We got to mind our P's and Q's, and we hope we have favorable weather conditions to make a really good solid crop this year.
I was talking with an industry guy, seed guy, last week, and I said, you know, Steve Brown always says we just need an inch of rain every Friday at 5 o'clock, and he said, I'd kind of rather it be at noon. Yeah. Well, Steve, we appreciate your time. Simmer, Amanda, enjoy the conversation. As Steve said, we're hoping for a good year this year for everybody. And if anybody, you know, if anybody with Extension can ever help at all, please don't hesitate to reach out and let us know. And we'll be back with another episode soon.
The Alabama Crops Report is a production of the Alabama Cooperative Extension System.